Okay, the next argued case this morning is number 22-1199, Alguerrer Iron and Steel, LLC, against the United States. Mr. Grossling.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Rob Gosling, here today on behalf of Plaintiff Appellant Alguerrer Iron and Steel Company. AGIS is how I abbreviate it. In this case, Commerce acted illegally when it determined that corrosion-resistant steel produced in the UAE using Chinese steel and exported to the United States was circumventing the 80 and CVD orders on core from China. Our briefs raised several arguments that illustrated why Commerce's circumvention determination was contrary to law. Given the available time, I'd like to focus on just a few of those errors today, beginning with patterns of trade. In determining whether to include merchandise produced in a foreign country within an AD or CVD order on another country, the circumvention statute directs that Commerce shall take into account patterns of trade, including sourcing patterns. In this case, Commerce compared 2 4-year periods of time preceding and following the initiation of the China core investigations and found that AGIS's exports of core to the United States produced with Chinese steel had increased. Commerce thus found that the pattern of trade during the period of inquiry supported a determination that circumvention of the China core orders had occurred. But citing this one fact out of context is incomplete. And in addition, AGIS identified numerous other trade patterns that established that AGIS did not shift its trade in response to the China core orders. Commerce, unfortunately, ignored all of these arguments in their entirety. For example, Commerce did not address at all that AGIS's steel purchases from China decreased substantially over the latter period of inquiry, so that by the time of the final semi-annual period that they examined, Chinese steel purchases represented only a fraction of their total purchases. Commerce also ignored entirely that during the 4 years following initiation of the China core investigations, virtually all of the steel inputs that AGIS purchased from China were never used to produce core shipped to the United States, and that only a fraction of the core shipped to the United States was produced with Chinese steel. But perhaps the most important...
Do you agree that you do not contest Commerce's findings on the patterns of trade factor with respect to Commerce's countrywide analysis? Do you agree with that statement?
I do disagree because Commerce did not have information on its patterns of trade with respect to total exports to the United States. I apologize. They had data regarding total exports of core to the United States, but they did not know exactly how much of that core was produced with Chinese steel. With respect to my client, AGIS, there was an increase from before the initiation of the China orders to after the initiation of the China orders. But that simple fact of an increase from the before period to the after period neglects entirely that during that 4-year period, AGIS's shipments of core to the United States decreased substantially.
Well, could you, maybe that's explained because AGIS's purchase of hot rolled cold rolled steel from China in the 49 period after initiation of the core investigation, it increased by more than 26,000%. I mean, that's a lot. That's a big increase,
Your Honor. That is a
and
huge
it's
increase.
Kind of like stocking your pantry, and then for the next 4 years, you don't have to go back and restock.
It's an enormous amount, but the fact is that almost none of that purchases of Chinese hot rolled steel went to the United States. In 2016, AGIS did ship core.
Did any of it go to the United States?
Yes, a small amount.
Here, the purpose of this particular test or analysis is just to spot the trends, correct? Trade trends.
It's supposed to spot all the trends and patterns that might exist. There's no specific requirement in the law that Commerce look at a particular trend or many trends. but we presented a number of trends to Commerce that they ignored in their entirety. In 2016, the year of publication of the core orders, AJS did export merchandise to the United States that was produced with Chinese steel. But in the following year, those shipments containing Chinese steel represented less than 1% of all shipments to the U.S. And in 2018, part of zero.
I think part of what you're complaining about is really saying that they didn't look at some AGIS-specific data. Is that? I just want to make sure I clarify your argument.
But no, exactly. Exactly. Commerce.
Look at that.
Correct. Okay. Correct. In 2018, AGS had no shipments. In 2019, zero shipments to the United States of core produced with Chinese steel. So we made these arguments to Commerce. They ignored them. They didn't address them. But beyond the normal requirement that they should discuss arguments brought to their attention, why does this matter? Why is it so important? It's important because the statute also requires under 1677J(b)(13) that Commerce analyze whether or not action is appropriate and necessary to prevent circumvention of the order. And in this case, in the 2 years prior to the initiation of the inquiry, AJS had not even exported any of the circumventing, the allegedly circumventing material. And by the time Commerce reached its final determination, they hadn't shipped any for 3 years. If Commerce is supposed to determine whether or not action is necessary to prevent circumvention of the orders, then how is it reasonable that they made an affirmative circumvention determination when such circumvention was not even happening and the small amounts of shipments that did include Chinese steel had not been shipped for more than 3 years? In our opinion, it's not reasonable, but Commerce never reached that.
Maybe some of the data that I picked up from the record may be incorrect, but it seems to me that AGIS's export of core that used Chinese origin hot rolled steel and cold rolled steel increased from 0 metric tons to 8,809 metric tons after the core investigation was initiated.
That is correct. And during that same period that it exported that amount of core, it also exported about 250,000 tons that did not include Chinese core. In fact, at the same time that AGIS was reducing and eliminating...
I'm sorry, repeat that again. Did you say Chinese core?
I'm sorry, I meant Chinese steel from China. At the same time, the exact same time that AGIS was not only reducing but eliminating all of its shipments of core to the United States that used Chinese steel, it was increasing by 10% per year all of its shipments of core to the United States that included non-Chinese core.
Okay. From this, can you move over to the value-added
sure.
category?
Our value-added argument in particular is that Commerce did not follow the specific statutory instruction that the value of the processing in the UAE was minor or insignificant with respect
and
to
you,
the...
You claim that it was 30% value-added in the UAE.
Correct, Your Honor.
Is that right?
We believe it's even much higher than that because Commerce did not use the appropriate profit
okay, percentage. So now we're headed to something I'm really interested in. So is it your claim that Commerce did not consider the data that you were offering that shows the 30% and or that Commerce did not explain why 30% is insignificant?
In our brief, we went to some length to argue why Commerce did not explain why its determination of that percentage was significant. But to be honest, Commerce never should even have gotten to that decision. We should never even to make those arguments because Commerce's formula was incorrect. If Commerce had based its calculation on the core shipped to the United States that was produced with Chinese steel and based its profit percentage on that amount of steel instead of a company-wide steel percentage, then we wouldn't even be having that discussion about what constitutes significant.
See, this case is not about circumvention by just one company. It's circumvention of products from an entire country. So countrywide data is fair.
Fair enough. But the other respondent had zero exports to the United States that were produced with Chinese steel. And my client, the second respondent, had not had any in more than 3 years when Commerce made its final determination. And a combination of those factors, if Commerce had considered it, if they had analyzed it, I think they would have come to the opposite conclusion, that there was no circumvention, even based on a countrywide decision. But the fact is that that's just my speculation, because Commerce never addressed those patterns of trade. They never addressed my arguments regarding the appropriate level of profit percentage that they should have used in accordance with the statute.
Does a value added in the UAE cause a change, a shift in the tariff classification from the hot rolled steel to core?
Yes, it does. It's, I believe, from 7208 to 7212 for the four-digit HTS classification.
When reaching its determination on the value of processing subfactor, do you agree that Commerce considered evidence other than the calculations?
I'm sorry, Arna, could you say
that? Yeah. When reaching its determination on the value of processing subfactor, do you agree that Commerce considered evidence other than the calculations?
I don't believe there's any information on the record that they considered external evidence. Commerce takes issue with not agreeing with my formula for making that profit calculation. But in fact, I use Commerce's calculation. I use Commerce's formula. The only difference was that I added in the profit on the sale to the United States instead of a company-wide profit that Commerce assigned. In a case where core exported to the United States using Chinese steel represented less than 1% of all exports of core to the United States and less than 0.2% of worldwide sales of core, it was not reasonable for Commerce to base a profit calculation on worldwide profits as opposed to the profits on just those sales to the United States that were made with Chinese steel.
Okay, let's hear from the other side, and we'll have rebuttal.
Thank you very much,
based on what they say. Ms. Geddes.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. In this case, there's not really any dispute as to how Commerce reached each of its decisions or what evidence it relied on. The dispute essentially comes down to Commerce's chosen methodology at several points in the process. And of course, where the statute doesn't specify a methodology, Commerce has very, very broad discretion to determine the most appropriate way to do so. Even more so in this case, where Congress has repeatedly expressed an intent to avoid, for instance, hard numerical tests that companies could potentially rely on those and, you know, game the system in order to find circumvention. So, for instance, in 1994, when Congress amended the statute, it specified that it was changing the value-added factor in order to shift the focus of the inquiry away from a test of the difference in value toward the nature of the process performed. The goal was to have a new standard that would be less difficult to meet, to improve our country's ability to prevent circumvention, and therefore to forego any sort of rigid numerical standard.
Can you just answer a question that I asked opposing counsel so I can make sure I understand the state of play here? When reaching its determination on the value of processing subfactor, do you agree that Commerce considered evidence other than the calculations?
Absolutely. So the value-added factor, that is basically one in five sub-factors as to whether AGIS's facilities are minor or insignificant. And Congress only directed the Department of Commerce to take each factor into account. So Commerce also found that all four other sub-factors weighed in favor of a finding of circumvention. But even with respect to that value-added analysis, Commerce does this both qualitatively and quantitatively. And in the language I was just citing when Congress amended that section, it basically directed them to shift the focus more towards that qualitative holistic approach rather than a concrete numerical approach. But Commerce did also consider a numerical calculation of the value added. In its initial determination, it did not consider profits and administrative costs at all. At AGIS's request, following those preliminary determinations, it decided to include those, and as AGIS noted, it did use that broader data and not the data specific to the United States. But really, Commerce was never required to consider profits at all. And in fact, it's not really intuitive why they should point to the portion of the price that they added to get a profit and claim that that's somehow value added to the product itself. Remember that the inquiry is aimed at deciding whether, in the process of producing core products, is the portion of that process that's performed by AGIS and other similar facilities in the UAE, is that, are they adding a significant enough amount of value that they're not circumventing those duties imposed? And the idea that they would need to include the profits in that value added, it doesn't really make sense for the purposes of what they're trying to assess.
So in your opinion, even if Commerce's calculations were wrong, can we still conclude that Commerce's determination on the value of processing subfactor was supported by substantial evidence?
Yes, because they looked both at that numerical value and they looked more at the nature of the process performed, as Congress said should be the focus. So qualitatively, they found consistent with their other findings as to the minor and insignificant factor that the value of processing was relatively small in the UAE. AGIS focused a lot of its argument on the patterns of trade, but essentially what AGIS is arguing for is to read a new requirement into the statute that would say that the patterns have to be continuous through the period into which Commerce makes its conclusion. First of all, that simply isn't a requirement of the statute. The statute left that within the discretion of Commerce, as I've said, because Commerce needs to be able to adapt to the circumstances of each case. It can't set some rigid test that could easily be gamed by parties in order to circumvent the laws that we have to protect our domestic interests and encourage fair trade. So in this case, Commerce looked at the numbers before and after those duty decisions were passed on core products from China, and it found an increase. AGIS characterized this as an increase. I would say that is a drastic understatement, which, based on some of the questions you asked, I think is fully understood. On pages 11 and 12 of our brief, most of these numbers are BPI, but it's easy to see that before those countervailing and anti-dumping duty orders were issued, basically, what AGIS was importing from China and exporting to the United States was negligible compared to the amount afterwards. And eventually,
Commerce is countrywide findings sufficient on their own to conclude that Commerce's patterns of trade determination was also supported by substantial evidence. The AGIS specific findings.
So those countrywide patterns of trade were consistent with findings of circumvention. The reason Commerce initiated this investigation in the first place was that it noticed increased countrywide imports of those steel substrate inputs from China to the UAE, significant increases around 35% to 47%. It also found increased imports of core in the United States from the UAE and other countries, and that is another enormous number, something along the lines of 6,000%. So that's why it initiated to AGIS's point that Commerce should consider whether there was any decrease in that trend over time. As I was saying, that would essentially require something that the statute doesn't require, which is to say that those trades have to continue upward throughout the course of the investigation. And that wouldn't be feasible. Companies could easily use that rule to evade having those duties applied to them because they could simply circumvent for a short period of time and then cease circumvention or, as the court suggested.
The ultimate goal of the circumvention inquiry is to determine whether circumvention is occurring. There's no exports to the U.S., there's no circumvention on the likelihood of that. That data shows the likelihood of exports to the U.S. to be minimal.
Sure, and I would argue that there are two ways that Commerce might respond to that. They might say, if the circumvention isn't happening today, then we can't find circumvention. But as I've said, it would be easy to game that system by they could cease as soon as they think that Commerce is likely to start investigating them, they could cease. Or as you suggested, they could stock the pantry with those inputs and then continue.
I agree, but I'm reluctant to give Commerce the wide, broad discretion that you apparently believe it has in relying on these data or the data that it gets. I mean, zero exports also means something.
Right. What zero exports means is that all AGIS has to do is put a certificate in its shipments saying we didn't use the inputs from China, and they don't have to pay the duties. That's the only consequence of this case.
Is that your argument, that they did? Are you arguing that that's what they did? They used false certificates?
No. Sorry. Going forward, now that there's been this finding of circumvention, now they don't have to pay duties as long as they certify that they aren't using those products from China. No, I'm absolutely not accusing them of any sort of false certificate. I'm simply saying the consequence of this case is that if they continue to not circumvent by not using Chinese substrates and exporting those final products to the United States, they don't have to pay anything. The only thing is that slight administrative annoyance of including that certificate with their shipments. And in exchange for that annoyance, Commerce is able to identify cases of circumvention and address them, whether or not the companies do it for a short period of time and then stop, whether or not they build up those products and then stop importing further products from China. So this is just simply a case where the benefit to being able to protect fair trade in the United States and to protect our domestic industries, Commerce found it was worth doing that, even if the, you know, active circumvention isn't clearly happening today. But looking at those trade patterns from shortly after those duties were imposed on China, where those inputs from China to the UAE and those exports from the UAE to the United States just skyrocketed. And that was why they investigated this in the first place, because of those patterns that seemed to be consistent with circumvention.
Counselor, in the area of the value added, why did Commerce adequately explain why it rejected AGIS's calculations?
It did explain why it rejected them. For instance,
you do agree that Commerce has a duty to explain its actions.
Yes, Commerce has a duty to explain the basis for its decisions. But in this,
do so here.
Yes, on page 496 of the appendix, it does acknowledge that AGIS suggested its own formulas, but then Commerce goes on to explain why it selected a different formula, and Commerce isn't required to use the preferred formula of AGIS or any other party. In this case, it explained the basis for its formula, and as long as its formula is reasonable, that's all that Commerce has to show. As I said in this case, first of all, the value-added formula is a very small factor. I would direct the court.
It also has to show the reasonableness of its rejection of the data, AGIS's data.
Yes, and it did identify, you know, it did acknowledge that it wasn't using AGIS's data. I don't know how, it didn't provide an intensely detailed explanation of the differences between the formulas, but that would require a lot of Commerce if every time a respondent proposed a specific formula or proposed a specific methodology.
Yeah. If we were to find that, I mean, is this the case that's been remanded once already for Commerce to explain its, okay, this is another case this week. Okay. All right. But Commerce does have to provide some sort of explanation. We understand that. In this case, it doesn't appear that it did. If we find that decision, then the value added determination, is not supported by substantial evidence, what does that do to the case? Should we remand at that point?
No, the value added formula is really a very small fraction of the overall analysis. So as I've said, the statute has five requirements. One of those requirements is a finding that the process.
Yeah, but you're not answering my question. If Commerce does not explain why it rejected AGIS's calculation and the data that it offered, and we find that that's the case, and we determine that decision lacks substantial evidence, should we remand at that point?
No, because the decision as a whole would still be based on substantial evidence. So, for example, in the case, peer-bearing case, which AGIS has cited repeatedly, they found that a third-party manufacturing accounted for 38% of total manufacturing. But even then, they said that if the other factors weighed in the other direction, that 38% number still wouldn't be so significant as to outweigh the other factors. And in that case, the court was considering an even lower standard than here. They were considering how much a product would have to be changed in order for it not to fall under those countervailing and anti-dumping duty rates in the first instance. So in this case, we're already accepting that they didn't originate in China and they don't fall under that in the first instance. So presumably there was some sort of substantial change, but now we're considering whether this is a case of circumvention, and that's when this new analysis of
Let's go back to Appendix 496.
Sure.
That's the page you cited as providing the basis for the rejection. Show me on that page where the rejection is, as you said, detailed.
Yes. And I don't mean to say that this is the only place in the appendix where they describe it, but in the second or the first full paragraph of that page, they do say that they that AGIS submitted a series of analyses, but that Commerce finds its formula unpersuasive. Sorry, I'm just rereading this. Yeah, it explains why it finds AGIS's formula unpersuasive, because Commerce is determining what the further processing cost is as a percentage of the total U.S. sales price. I'd have to look back at the specific formula AGIS proposed, but it does give its reason for rejecting AGIS's formula. And it's one thing for Commerce to
But what it says is, it's kind of like what you're arguing. And it's kind of, Commerce did it this way, and Commerce has discretion to use its own calculation, doesn't have to accept other people's or other parties' calculations. But I'm concerned by that argument. I'm concerned by your assertions and your continued defense of Commerce that it does not have to explain its actions. It does. It's an administrative agency, and it must explain its actions.
It does have to explain its actions, but this is an incredibly complicated case. AGIS produced a lot of evidence and made a lot of arguments, and in this case, Commerce is addressing why it rejected that argument. It's giving the basis for it, and more importantly, it's explaining why its own calculation is reasonable. It would be one thing if Commerce were identifying evidence that it were ignoring, but this is a methodology, and choosing the methodology for applying the statutory framework is squarely within Commerce's discretion, and parties could come up with infinite different methodologies that they think would be better. And sure, Commerce should have to respond to those as Commerce did here, but to require a detailed comparison of Commerce's methodology to every single methodology proposed by another party seems excessive in light of the requirement. The sole requirement being that
I assure you we're used to complicated cases in this court. That is not the reason to defer to what looks very peculiar to me.
Sure, and I don't mean to say that Commerce should, you know, that there's no room for complexity. I simply mean that parties could come up with infinite different proposed methodologies that they think would be appropriate, and Commerce could spend thousands of pages in its decisional memoranda doing a detailed comparison of every theoretically possible methodology. But all Commerce has to do is choose what it believes is the appropriate methodology and bolster that with substantial evidence. And in this case...
No, that methodology has to be reasonable. It's got to be supported by data. And it's got to be explained.
Yes, and Commerce did explain the reasons for its methodology.
But where else other than on this page is that explanation provided?
I'm not sure what... I think that is the extent of the analysis on that page. They also go into value-added...
These two lines that you read, that's the analysis?
Well, this... here, one moment. They also analyze... in their final decision on page 678, they turn back to this issue. But overall, their discussion of plaintiff or of AGIS's specific methodology is not in great detail, at least not on those pages. If I'm overlooking another portion of the appendix, I apologize. But Commerce, yes, it has to give a reasonable formula supported by the evidence, but the court is asking whether it should go beyond that and not only provide a reasonable explanation for the methodology it chooses, but provide a detailed explanation for every methodology that it does not choose. And that is theoretically infinite. There's no limit to the different possible methodologies it could use to assess these factors, and it chose what was most appropriate in its view with the goal of furthering Congress's intention of protecting the United States trade and avoiding any sort of unfair trade practices. And naturally, respondents are going to propose methodologies that would favor them, and Commerce has no obligation to follow those methodologies. And in this case, it was perfectly reasonable for it to stick to the methodology that it determined was appropriate. And in this case, as I've explained, they already decided to adjust their original formula in view of AGIS's suggestion that they incorporate those profits and administrative costs. And that did raise the percentage. And even that was probably more than Commerce was required to do, because as I've said, suggesting that the profits are part of the value added, it's not at all clear that that is the case.
Can you just also walk us through how you think page 678 helps, just like you walked us through on 496?
I'm sorry, I don't have that language up in front of me.
Do you have the appendix?
I have the appendix virtually, and it's frozen right now. I'm sorry. Thank you. So sure. So the language on page 678 says, that regarding incorporating profit, financial expenses, and SG&A into the calculation of processing costs added in the UAE, even if AGIS's profit, financial expenses, and SG&A were added to the value added percentage calculation, the percentage of value added does not materially change, and thus the cost of processing CRS and HRS would still be much greater than the cost of processing CORE in the UAE. So in that way, it does explain the fact that incorporating those didn't change its initial decision. But I'm not sure. As far as I'm aware, no, there's not a detailed comparison of Commerce's methodology with the methodology described by plaintiffs or described by AGIS. But I would simply reiterate that that is more than is required of Commerce. Requiring Commerce to do that, there might be no end to the analyses it would have to perform if it has to not only support its own decision, but support every hypothetical alternative or support, you know, do a comparison with that and every hypothetical decision it's rejected. And I would say that's more than Commerce is required to do. And in any case, this is just one element of one of five sub-factors for the factor in dispute.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Mr. Bay, you have a couple of minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to start by just piggybacking on what we were previously discussing. I mean, I think one important thing to keep in mind when it comes to that the profit calculation and how we were discussing the two different pages in the appendix. The process was the first page reference, 478, or 496, sorry, that was in the preliminary determination when Commerce did not include profit SG&A in their calculation, which AGIS objected to. Then after
this is not the explanation I was seeking then.
Well, it indicates that there were problems with the formulas put forth by AGIS, but on the issue that
the government has said that this details the explanation.
They are connected, and if I can explain the...
You're saying this is not the detailed explanation. Because it was only in the... This is only used in the preliminary...
Well, this was in the preliminary. It talks about their formulas in general. Because there's multiple formulas we're talking about. Number one, we're talking about their alternative calculation formula from the prelim for how to devalue for the processing. One of the issues with that, their formulas, is that formula includes... as does the second formula, which we're talking about profit, it talks about the cost of the Chinese substrate coming directly from the actual sales that then go
to the only relevance is to determine whether there is, in fact, circumvention. Is that right? If there's no circumvention, it doesn't matter. Is that correct?
Well, the purpose of the statute is to find circumvention. But we're trying to figure out whether the value of the processing added is minor or insignificant. And in doing so, Commerce, was looking at the entire process, comparing, the making of the hot rolled steel substrate and that the value added for the activities that happened in the UAE. Now, the way that they valued the substrate that came from China, they used surrogate value. Now, that surrogate value use of that surrogate value was upheld as reasonable by the CIT and isn't challenged in front of this court. Now, the formula used by AGIS in the preliminary, used those hot rolled substrate values. Therefore, if it is reasonable for Commerce to use the surrogate values, then it continues that it's reasonable that they would not continue to use any other values that would be tainted by those hot rolled substrate prices.
The answer appears to be that using U.S. data alone would have been misleading. Do you agree with that? Using the U.S. data that AGIS had provided would have been misleading.
Correct. That is correct. It would have been
but
misleading.
You don't say that. I don't see that Commerce says that.
Well, I think...
I said it and you said it, but where does Commerce actually show that it's misleading and that's the basis for use of the other data?
I think what Commerce says, it finds the analysis that was presented by AGIS unpersuasive because it's determining the further processing cost as a percentage of the total U.S. sales price. It can't do that if it's using faulty data as underpinning that comparison.
Does it matter if there's a change in the tariff classification when you get hot rolled steel or cold rolled steel and produce core from it?
Not within the context of circumvention. Okay. There's nothing in the statute that makes that requirement. But if I could quickly finish on my point about the profit calculation that AGIS mentioned earlier, like with the initial calculations that we're using the hot rolled substrate cost, the profit calculation put forth by AGIS also has that flaw. And so it accounts for profit and over accounts for profit because it has what has been deemed to be unreliable costs within it. Commerce looked at what was available, figured out the methodology that made most sense and was reasonable, and it used an AGIS-wide number to really narrow down on what the value of the processing is in the UAE. I would also add, this case is a little unusual in the sense that there is one company that was an active participant as a respondent. And so therefore we're talking about AGIS numbers here. But in reality, there were multiple, there's multiple companies that produce core in the UAE. There's a countrywide inquiry. One of the companies that was initially contacted, because they are a producer of core in the UAE, actually did not respond in the initial stages of the investigation and was in adverse facts available was applied to them. So if we, AGIS's profit calculation doesn't, apply only to them, but like it also doesn't work for, we're doing a more broad countrywide approach. And the argument that AGIS makes in their briefs is that the language of the statute requires this level of analysis, that the only data that Commerce can use is the data directly from the individual sales of core made from Chinese substrate exported to the United States at issue. And there is nothing in the statute that limits Commerce to that, level of data usage. And it would inhibit the ability of Commerce to actually carry out the circumvention statute by not permitting Commerce to find out what is most reasonable for the individual industries at issue, the individual facts of the case at issue.
Anything else? Anything else for counsel? Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have rebuttal, Mr. Grossman?
Your Honor, thank you very much. I'll try to keep it short. First, Judge Cunningham, I apologize. I didn't understand the nature of your question. Of course, Commerce looks at more than just that one factor. They look at level of investment, level of extent of production facilities, nature of the production process. We've included remarks and arguments in our briefs that address all of those issues and why we believe that Commerce made mistakes and errors in evaluating each and every one of them. I think we did not address research and development, but all the other factors are ones where we felt that Commerce's determination that the value added was small, or the production facilities were insignificant, or that the level of investment was minor, are all areas where they did not support their decisions with substantial record evidence. The particular statute that we've been talking about asks whether the value of the processing performed in the foreign country represents a small proportion of the value of the merchandise imported into the United States. When we suggested an alternate calculation, we used Commerce's formula. We used Commerce's data. We used their evaluation of the substrate. The only thing we changed was we used a profit figure based on the merchandise imported into the United States, as opposed to a countrywide determination. And we believe that Commerce did not sufficiently explain their rationale. Commerce, this court has determined that the agency is not required by law to provide an explanation of every argument that respondents make, but it is required to discuss them so that the court and other parties have a reasonable understanding and can discern Commerce's path. In this case, as in many other cases related to the patterns of trade, level investments, Commerce did not answer or respond to or address any of the arguments you made. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under submission.